From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Peter Sagal. Every year, the big news magazines hand out their Person of the Year awards. We say, why be a skinflint? Why just one person? Why not share the love? So today, Wait, Wait hands out our Person of the Year awards like candy, namely by revisiting some of our favorite celebrity guests of recent months. We start with Craig Ferguson, the Scottish comedian who came from seemingly nowhere to become a fixture on late-night TV. When he joined panelists Charlie Pierce, Sue Ellicott, and Tom Baudet, we asked him about his monologues, which are more like lengthy stream-of-consciousness musings than the traditional collection of jokes.
What happens is that when I started doing the show, they asked me to do a traditional late-night monologue. You know, hey, you guys, how about those playoffs? What about those Yankees? And when I was talking about the Yankees, I had no idea what I was talking about. I thought it was the Revolutionary War. I was just, you know, reading out jokes. So I said, look, I'll do whatever's on my mind. I'll talk about what I want to talk about, and we'll see how that goes. And it seems to have picked up. That's really the way it went. I couldn't read any more jokes. I was so bad at it.
Right, you're not coming out and doing a series of bing-bang topical jokes. You're making these rambling monologues about, like you say, any topic at hand.
Yes, that's right.
But they're also...
I think actually it's what television's better for that, because I think it makes it more intimate. And at that time of night, most people are drunk.
That's
so,
true.
or intimate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Most people are being intimate. They're not paying any attention to what I'm saying.
So have you had to learn how to... Because you grew up in Scotland, of course. We don't have the tradition of...
We don't have late-night television. It's all turned off at 8 o'clock at night, and everyone gets beaten. Right. Hey, television turned off. Let's beat everyone up.
I got to tell you, there are some nights I've watched Leno, and that seems like a better alternative. But
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's on another network. I can say that.
That's right, yeah.
But did you have to, like, learn the ways and mores? I mean, like, how to sit and chat with some starlet about her next movie that may not have come naturally to you?
Yeah, a little bit. Although I have instituted a policy of no one gets on the show unless I'm remotely interested in talking to them, which is... It's a new idea, apparently, but, you know, they say, oh, well, you know, some, and I won't name anyone, but, you know, Tara Reid, for example, wants to come on about... I'll say, well, I'd rather she didn't. Can't she do it in someone else's, you know, show? She was on the show once, but, you know, we both thought it was a terrible idea about halfway through the interview, and I threw it to a commercial, and I think everyone was happier.
Really? You did that? You sort of said, oh, we're going to take a break, and then, well, the camera was off, you turned to Tara Reid and said, I'm sorry, but I'm just not that into you. Is that what you did?
No, I didn't. I did it the Hollywood way. I said, we have to take a break. And then it went to commercial, and I said, you're terrific! and then I never asked her back, basically.
You had a career, Craig, as a stand-up, of course, before you, or maybe even as you came to America, and we looked into it. So tell me, Craig, about this Bing Hitler.
Oh, Bing Hitler was a character that I played early on in my career. Everyone was doing character comedy in Britain in the 80s, and I thought, I want a character who has a name that will stand out in a poster.
Yeah.
You know. So I chose the name Bing Crosby for comfort, and then the name Hitler, I thought, well, that'll get people's attention. And it did, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, did it in a good way, or did you get yourself in trouble?
Yeah, no, it was fine. Actually, the character was very successful. It was nothing to do with, you know, singing or fascism, but it was...
Which is a shame, because when you eliminate singing and fascism, what's left to do comedy about,
right,
really?
Because these are the building blocks of comedy. Without them, what can you do?
Exactly. You're stuck doing prop humor without fascism, really.
That's right. Without singing and fascism, everyone's carrot top. And then where are you going to go?
Well, Craig Ferguson, we are utterly delighted to have you with us today. Now, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You are the last organ grinder in New Jersey.
Excellent.
We saw a fine article in the L.A. Times last week about Joe Bush, who is... Well, he's the last organ grinder in New Jersey.
Right.
We're going to ask you three questions about the life and times of a man who truly has a monkey on his back.
Right.
If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Craig Ferguson playing for?
Peter, he is playing for Mike Fangman of Burbank, Illinois.
All right. Here's your first question. Joe Bush did a lot of things in his youth. He was in a rock and roll band. He tried stilt walking. Why did he decide to become an organ grinder? Was it A, his friends said his big curly mustache made him look like an organ grinder, so why not? B, he was walking down the street when he saw a crank organ sitting in the trash, took advantage of it. Or C, as he put it, quote, I don't know, I'm just somehow drawn to tiny monkeys in hats.
I think B, he took advantage of a trashy organ he saw lying in the street.
Decided to make it into his living. I asked for that one, and it still took me by surprise. Isn't that...
Aim to please. I'm nothing if not a vaudevillian.
Okay. No, the answer, of course, was A, the big curly mustache. The corners
really?
Of his... Yeah, the corners of his... He's in the 1970s. He had a big curly mustache, and the ends of it started to meet down at his chin, and his friends said, hey, you know what you look like? You look like one of those hurdy-gurdy guys. And he said, well, why fight it? And that's what he became.
Well why not shave it?
You know what's funny is the reporter in the article suggested that to him, and he slapped his head and said, oh, no, now you tell me. All right, you have two more chances here.
All right.
Next question. So, of course, he had made this decision to become a hurdy-gurdy guy. He had to go out and get himself a monkey. He did. The monkey's name was George. How did Joe begin the process of training George to be his partner? A, he fed George all the caramel popcorn he wanted until he became dazed and tractable. B, he tied himself to George all night, three nights a week until they got used to each other. Or C, he got an organ grinder monkey outfit for himself so that George would see him and want to imitate him.
This is a trick question, isn't it?
It is.
I want to say he got the outfit so the monkey would imitate him, but I think the monkey's smarter than that. So I suspect it was A, the other one.
You fed George all the caramel popcorn?
Yeah, that one. Why not?
Well, sadly, it was B. He tied himself to the monkey all night, three nights a week.
Is that legal? I don't know if I like that.
This was in suburban New Jersey, where, believe me, anything goes.
How closely did he tie himself to the monkey?
Unclear. Well, they'd fight. He said he'd tie himself to the monkey. He'd turn in the TV so that it would cover the noise of them fighting, and then he and the monkey would go at it, hammer and tongs, all night, shrieking, yelling, whatever, until finally the monkey gave up and started cooperating with him. And
but when you say tied himself to the monkey, do you mean there's a little kind of wristband around the his
That would be my guess.
He wasn't, like, strapped flat to his body.
I don't think so. I don't think he wrapped duct tape around himself with the monkey.
That's a baby Bjorn thing.
Because if he had done that, I guarantee you the monkey would have won.
Exactly.
You gotta keep distance. Interesting to know what people are doing while you're working on late night television.
Exactly. Yes, the only purpose of your show, sir, is to drown out the monkey cry. All right, we're gonna leave Joe and George alone. They ended up having a wonderful career together until George died. He's now freeze-dried and sitting on Joe's mantelpiece. Well, where else do you want him to be?
Is he still attached to the freeze-dried monkey?
No, I believe he cut the cord and moved on with his life.
All right.
Still performing with another monkey, but we have a historical question for you. One of the reasons that Joe is one of the last or the last organ grinder in the New York City area is because organ grinders in New York were dealt a terrible blow when Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia banned them entirely in the 1930s. Why did he do that? A, Mr. and Mrs. Astor insisted on it after a monkey climbed in their Fifth Avenue window during, quote, a marital moment.
Wow.
Was it because the mayor hated organ grinders because when he was a kid, he used to get teased by kids shouting, hey, organ grinder, where's your monkey? Or see, reporters who had gathered for a mayoral appearance were distracted and eventually walked away to watch a performing monkey. And the mayor was mad.
I'm thinking A, it was the Astors in the three-way with the monkey.
I really have no one to blame for this but myself. So.
I mean, come on, you stop it.
I know.
I think maybe the answer, but I think probably it's B, the other one that I've completely forgotten.
The mayor hated organ grinders because they used to tease him by calling him one.
Yeah, why not?
That's right, in fact.
Wow!
It had to do, of course, with anti-Italian prejudice at the turn of the century and the fact that Fiorello LaGuardia was pretty funny looking.
Yeah, well, you're going to be like that if you strap a freeze-dried monkey to your machine.
I can still hear their cries, LaGuardia wrote in his memoirs 50 years later. Hey, Fiorello, where's your monkey? Carl, how did Craig Ferguson do in our quiz?
Peter, he needed at least two correct answers to win for Mike Fangman, but Craig had just one correct answer.
I'm terribly sorry.
It's all right. You know, you've got so much else going for you. This is a minor bump in the road.
No, I feel I've let America down. I'm going home.
All right. Greg Ferguson is the host of CBS's The Late Late Show. You can watch it pretty much every weeknight at 12:35 a.m. Eastern. He's also the author of the new novel, Between the Bridge and the River. Craig Ferguson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Lovely to have time with you.